Hello and welcome to the Lead Hership Show. I am your host, Harriet Schumacher, certified executive coach and women's leadership expert. Thank you for tuning in. Each week, we bring forward-thinking, inspiring, and real conversations for women who want to lead and live more fully. I'm so excited to have you here. I hope you enjoy the next conversation. Thanks for tuning in. Okay. Very excited. And yeah, really excited. I feel like I have wanted to have you on the show for a very, I wanted to have you on the show for a really long time. And very excited and honored to have Dr. Mallory Ryan, Dr. Mal, here with us today, who is going to be talking to us about all of her wisdom and knowledge and experience around women's health. And I have actually had the honor and the privilege of working with Dr. Mal myself, going through a period of, you know, just stress and anxiety, which I shouldn't say a period, like that feels like an undercurrent that's kind of been woven through most of my life experience. So it wasn't anything new. It had just become heightened, and really appreciated the support and the wisdom and the resources that you provided to me when I was struggling. So thank you for being here and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a privilege to be here. I'm so excited.
And I think I told you this when I first met you was when your daughter was in the same class as my daughter.
That's right.
Right. And I remember like feeling your energy. And I don't think I ever told you this, but I remember feeling you like, I was like, I want to talk with her. Like, she stands out. I can feel something from her. And I think one of the class teacher was sick and you brought her some sort of tincture. Like, I don't know what it was, but some sort of like, she's like, oh yeah, you know, so-and-so's mom brought me this like thing for my sore throat. And she's a naturopathic doctor. And she goes, it tastes terrible, but it works. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is so cool. Like, who is this woman? She's bringing like tinctures to class. I love it. It's great. So I just wanted to say that, you know, I've been a fan and watching you from afar for a long time. So excited to have you here.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That's a high compliment coming from someone like yourself. I appreciate it very much. I completely forgot about that. And she's totally right. These taste absolutely terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So dig in, tell us, you know, about you, who are you, what's your jam? We want to hear the whole story and then we'll just kind of flow from there.
Amazing. So I'm Mal. Lots of people call me Dr. Mal. A couple of people call me Mom. I typically go by Mal, but I'm a naturopathic doctor. And so I specialize in functional medicine, which is kind of how the body operates. But my background is in psychology and neurology. So how the brain operates and how our thoughts and our mind influences our body. And then my specialty is in hormones. Mm-hmm. So I'm really fascinated by how, for instance, the stress response is a hormone and how the stress response, how women's hormones influence our body, how our mind play a role, how our brain is naturally designed. It's usually very validating for people to recognize like, no, this is how the brain's designed. This is not you. This is not something wrong with you. This is how we've evolved to be designed. So I love working with women. I love unpacking a lot of that stuff. I do think that there is a significant blind spot or lack of information in terms of women's health and access to information and a sense of empowerment on knowing your body and how it's operating and the fluctuations of women's hormones. And so I have a female collective, which is an online community where I just pop on once a week and chat about some of these things. And I think knowledge and accountability are super powerful. So yeah, I love what I do. And I love chatting with powerful, amazing women like yourself.
Well, we love that too. So talk to us about, you know, we got on I think like the last time that we kind of spoke, you know, formally was at the beginning of COVID. And I think you had been sitting on my sofa in my house prior to us going into lockdown and talking about me and, you know, I had done your the Dutch hormone test, and then fast forward, I think a couple weeks later, and we were like, okay, so see you soon, you know, because we're going into this unknown territory with COVID. So why don't you walk us through a little bit about what this year has been like for you, what you're noticing in the conversations that you're having with women, and we'll see where that takes us.
Yeah. I think COVID, just the whole experience that we've been having, one, it's global, which means that there's this universal weight, right? It's not isolated. It's not sort of pockets around the world. It feels like this sort of global universal weight. And the two characteristics of COVID that are fairly profound are, one, it does speak to this innate mechanism in us, is like at a very primal, basic level, we're designed to survive. We're designed to survive, to keep going, to evolve. So it really challenges and sort of speaks to this innate desire to survive. Because you turn on the news, you talk to anybody, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of conversations about survival. That's not wrong. It just means that it's really speaking to this very, very primal part of us. Mm-hmm. And the second part that's very profound to how our body responds to stress is a sense of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And so uncertainty is really, how do I say this? The body doesn't mind stress. So what I say that is, it's designed to be stressed. Stress isn't bad. Stress is good. I think it gets a bad rap. So stress, for instance, is like applying pressure to our lives. It's one of the only ways that we have this elevated sense of focus, elevated sense of motivation to advance ourselves. They did a research study a couple decades ago called the biosphere, and they created this perfect biosphere where they can grow these luscious plants and different species of everything. And they created the perfect temperature, perfect sunlight, perfect water conditions. And all the trees grew to a certain height and then they fell over and they couldn't figure out what it was until they realized that the biosphere was void of wind. It was void of stress. And so the trees didn't have the capacity to thicken their bark, to thicken the trunk in order to sustain and to become resilient to all of its sort of lifelong challenges. So stress isn't bad, but prolonged stress, and especially when it's infused with a sense of survival, when it's infused with unpredictability is really challenging for the stress response because it's trying to protect you. Just like anyone listening right now, I'm sure, especially given women, when you're the first to call during a crisis, like when something's truly stressful, like you're jumping to action. And when something is in the gray area and you don't know what to do and you don't know what's going to happen, it's more triggering. Mm-hmm. And so this year I find is such an example of trying to sit with and resolve and understand how do we move forward in a healthy way instead of really trying to push ourselves. And ultimately the answer in that is, a lot of people are feeling burnt out. A lot of women are feeling burnt out. I see women almost every day and they're experiencing a loss of sleep, lower energy, digestive issues, headaches, reactive, not feeling responsive. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's understandable, but we can intervene with some simple strategies to not just manage stress, but dismantle the stress response so that we're not giving it cues all day long that something very, very dangerous is around the corner.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because it reminds me of you sending me a message just when this all began and you're like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm great. I am ready for action. This, I was like, I've been training my whole life for this pandemic. Like I am ready to like go all in, you know? Crazy. Yeah. So, you know, definitely, you know, don't know that that's necessarily what I should be doing, but it's certainly what I have been doing, right? So talk to me about this disarming of the stress response, because I definitely agree with you. Stress is, it's a part of life, right? We're not going to not experience stress. So knowing that we are going to experience it, how do we manage it in a way that serves us better than, because burnout is probably a sign that we're not managing it well, I would assume.
Right, exactly. Burnout. Mm-hmm. So stress, the interesting thing about stress is that it has four main cues. So stress in and of itself. So the way that stress sort of manifests in the body is through a hormone called cortisol. And the way that it is cued to stimulate cortisol, the way that the body is cued to stimulate excess levels of cortisol is to, it's either through sleep deprivation triggers the stress response, and instability in blood sugar triggers the stress response. But more than anything else, the irony is that when the stress response is triggered so much that those are the first two things to go off, all we want is carbs and sugar to sort of fuel our brain and we just need sleep. So we get
what you're talking about.
Yeah. I have no idea. I've never experienced that. That's sarcasm. It's almost as if we get trapped in this cycle that perpetuates itself. So one of the things that has the capacity on the outside, which is influencing the stress response, is our perception. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't mean, when I say perception, it doesn't mean that it's all in your head, and it does mean that. So it's not as if what you're experiencing is invalid. It doesn't mean that what you're going through shouldn't be honored, but what it does mean is how we speak to ourselves about what we're going through has a very, very profound impact on how the body responds. So for instance, like if you were to wake up this morning and you coughed, what would you think?
I have COVID.
So immediately what happens is that the brain is designed to create connections instantly. It takes tiny bits of information and then creates a story. Mm-hmm. And so the way our stress response, cortisol, doesn't respond to the facts, it responds to the story. Mm. So when you start to understand that we think in stories, we relate to other people in stories, when you're feeling triggered, I want you to ask yourself, what's the truth? Is it true? Yes or no? Only ask yourself yes or no questions, because you don't give your mind the opportunity to create a story. You focus it on the facts. So focusing on the facts, it doesn't mean that you have to sit there and think so optimistically. That's creating a sense of optimism when you really don't feel like it can actually do more harm, because it just feels like you're trying to fake yourself and it's not authentic. But you can certainly ask yourself, is this true or not? And you can challenge the story, mm-hmm. because your body responds, your mind and the stress response responds to the story and not the situation. And so asking yourself yes or no questions can be very effective. It can be really helpful to say, okay, you know what? I coughed once. I'm going to see what unfolds. Like, let's see what happens. The truth is that I coughed once. It could be this, and it could be a million other different things.
Right.
And so the whole nature or the essence behind that is that how the language that we use when we refer to ourselves, when we think, is not just transient thoughts. It's actually instructions to the body. It's like, this is what we do. Your mind and your brain just take your word for it. If you're saying like, if you're sort of sitting at your kitchen table and you're stressing, being like, my business is over. I know that that seems like extreme. And I know my heart goes out to everybody. That's a very real thing. But that extreme statement, even me saying it out loud, it kind of sends that sort of physical response in your system. Mm-hmm. Understanding that you have the power with your language to either calm it down or trigger it is incredibly powerful.
That is so powerful. Mm-hmm. The way we talk to ourselves is basically triggering what's going on inside of our body. Yeah.
100%.
Oh, that's hard.
It's hard. And I think a lot of people don't really, because when you ask someone like, what do you think? And they're like, I don't know. Right? We aren't really active in terms of how we speak to ourselves, and we aren't really fully aware all the time. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling triggered, or after you're feeling triggered, if you just write down, you don't have to even think about it, just write down what you're thinking, you're going to find resistant words. So resistance words are things like when you say can't, should, shouldn't, right, wrong, good or bad. Mm-hmm. That will identify your black and white thinking. Mm-hmm. And that will sort of lead you to some of your constraints and some of the reasons why your physical body is on edge all the time. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that the situation isn't stressful. It just means that we can use these tiny strategies to make it a little bit more easeful. Like we can sort of subject some ease while we are managing stress.
Yes. I love that. It's hard, but it doesn't have to be. Like, it's about being aware of awake and aware of the conversation that you're having with yourself, and recognizing like I've been trying to do this for myself, recognizing that I am the person actually noticing the conversation that I'm having with myself. Like, it is a separate thing that I'm hearing and listening and tuning in and paying attention to. Mm-hmm. So being able to observe it, you know, from a distance doesn't happen mm-hmm. all the time. Nope. You know, sometimes like my thought would be, so if you ask me that question, like, okay, you're coughing. What do you tell yourself about that? What do you say to yourself? I'll say, well, I have COVID, right? Like, that would be a 2020 yeah. response. And if I was to ask myself, well, is that true? Yes or no? I was thinking, well, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe it is. Like, how do I know? Like, not necessarily trusting myself with my answer, right? So I might spend some time gathering evidence to support either why I'm right or why I'm wrong. So it sounds like I need to spend some time really doing better at the evidence gathering piece.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily, because we can't really, you're right. We can't say yes or no questions to things that we're not fully aware of yet. So is it true that I coughed? Yes. Is it true that I'm certain that I have COVID? No. Is it true that there are other possibilities why I coughed? Yes.
Yes. Yes. Could something else also be true? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of what that does is that it puts it on a mental spectrum. Yes. Because the mind is designed to, and this isn't just your mind, whoever's listening to mind, the mind, the brain is designed to hold on to and capture and focus on negative information more than positive. Mm-hmm. So it's the same reason why you can get 1,000 compliments and one criticism, and there's only one that you remember specifically. So when we give it that spectrum, we give it a little bit more air to breathe, and we think with a different, we think more critically than emotionally.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's mm-hmm. so it's so tangible. It's so mm-hmm. like I can instantly see how that would create some space. So rather than defaulting to spinning and, you know, mm-hmm. negativity and, you know, that very much, we were talking about this before we hopped on here today. I feel like this has really been a year of that kind of polarities of black and white thinking. It's either this or it's this. Yeah. There's not a lot of and or if or mm-hmm. you know, in between. There's not a lot of that thinking that's happening, and I think that we are getting pushed definitely in that direction just by the kind of content in the media that you know we're consuming. They definitely understand the psychology behind that. You can see it if you're paying attention to it. So mm-hmm. I was trying to kind of for me focusing on being able to breathe, because it feels like it's been a year where that has been challenging for a lot of different reasons. And I think that 2020 for me, the symbolism of this year has been about breath. And I think, you know, when we look at what's happening to the climate and the fires that have been happening, and looks like there's even more of those in the news today, like the planet feels to be on fire and not breathing. You know, what's mm-hmm. been happening in the Amazon, we have a respiratory illness now, which is literally taking people's breath away. Mm-hmm. And when I think about what's happening just with social activism and what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement and, mm-hmm. you know, George Floyd, I can't breathe. I feel like the mm-hmm. world is screaming at us to learn to breathe, because we are not or have not been breathing. So this is a really great strategy to help us create some space mm-hmm. to breathe.
And that's so beautiful what you said. I think that's absolutely true. And I find it so helpful to understand how the breath works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you jump in a pool, what do? You hold your breath.
Yep.
Right? Like we tend to be really quick inhalers. We're constantly sort of breathing up in our throat and our upper mm-hmm. chest. Mm-hmm. And when you come home after a long day and you sit down, what do?
Exhale.
We exhale. So there's a large nerve between your brain and your gut that controls the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the jumping in the pool is the on button. It's like, this is stressful. And the coming home from work is the off button. The parasympathetic nervous system is our off button. That is controlled by the exhale. It's shut off by the inhale. So when we are sort of up in our chest, breathing really rapidly, when you actively force yourself, and sometimes it's hard to take a deep breath in. Sometimes when you're so trained to breathe up in your chest, it feels uncomfortable to take a deep breath in. It almost feels triggering, and it doesn't, you don't have to take a deep breath in. If you prolong the exhale, what you're doing is you're sending the physical feedback to the brain to say, everything's okay, I'm safe. Mm-hmm. And so that breath analogy that you created is beautiful, because it's true. We're constantly sending information to our bodies, to our brains. And it's kind of like the body and the brain are like loyal dogs. They're just here to help. They're always trying to respond for you.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, because I am an exhaler. Like, I am that person. I probably hold my breath and then I exhale, and mm-hmm. I don't do it consciously. And I've received so much feedback over my life. Mm-hmm. When I exhale, people are like, are you okay? Like, they see it as like, I'm stressed when mm-hmm. I exhale. And I've always known that it's actually a way of me, you know, coping or calming down or getting ready for the next, right? So it's interesting to hear you say that.
Yes.
So, yeah, maybe I'm breathing too much in my chest on a regular basis if the exhales are like alarming to people when they hear them. They're like, are you okay? Like, here, you know, I'm blown over here. So yeah, that's interesting. Okay, we have talked about this before, and this is something that you have said and has always stood out to me. And I want you to talk more about this, that no one is coming to save you and that no one can fix you. Talk to us about that.
I think life can be really hard. People can go through incredibly difficult situations. They can have difficult upbringings. They could have tough times. Mm-hmm. And the sort of the hand of cards that they're dealt feels incredibly unfair. Mm-hmm. And so it's powerful and really empowering to know that despite your circumstance, and despite how unfair it may feel, and despite if someone has wronged you, whatever the situation has been, you are and will always continue to be the most equipped to support yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think when we get caught up into this idea that other people are meant to fix us, it creates not only a codependency, but it also creates this almost disabling of our own power. Like, we're waiting to feel a sense of approval. We're waiting to receive permission. We're waiting for the nod of it's okay to make decisions or to do things or to advance ourselves. And I think when you recognize that despite the situation that you've been through, whether it's fantastic, whether it's not, whether it's had its ups and downs, which is very human, that you will always be the most equipped and you will always be the most informed on how you operate. Mm-hmm. And I don't want any other person on earth to ever, ever, ever make you feel as though they are more equipped to support you or they are more informed in supporting you. Because as soon as you hand over that power, it's really difficult to notice that you handed it over. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've had to sort of come to learn that in my practice and my work, is that, like, just like you mentioned, and you probably alluded to it in sort of in a story, is that I love supporting people. I love seeing people advance and feel their best. And I had to learn the lesson that I'm here to walk beside you, not to pull you along. It's not for me to fix you. It's you fix yourself and I'm here to help. Mm. That's really, really powerful to me.
I think to women when you talk about that, and I have been having so many conversations about power just this week, and this collective, as you, the collective female experience around mm-hmm. power over. And mm-hmm. so I feel, and you know, patriarchy and our experience with power and how our stories have been written to disempower us. And so I'm not surprised that when women are looking for help, they don't see themselves as powerful, given mm-hmm. that historically has been our experience and has been written in text. And, you know, we mm-hmm. would go to work in those environments, right? So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So your message then is that we have the power. It's innate. It already exists inside of us.
Yes. And I think that it's also important to recognize exactly what you just said. Like, we develop a very, very prominent part of the brain develops when we're under 10 years old, sort of creating these connections and conditions and loops and belief systems. And because our brain is underdeveloped, we don't have that rational capacity and that logical part of our brain. We learn more through observation. Mm-hmm. So how you see the world, what you see informs how you not only see what a woman's role is, mm-hmm. it's also how you see yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that can be altered. It just sort of, it requires that awareness. And I think it also speaks to the idea, one of the superpowers of women is that we're emotionally tapped in. Like, we're emotional. The human being is an emotional entity. Mm-hmm. But women in particular, I think, have this really profound depth of emotion. And then somewhere along the line, we're led to believe that there's good and bad emotions, mm-hmm. that there's right and wrong ways to feel. And so we will move ourselves and we will push ourselves and we will contort ourselves just to avoid the bad emotions, because it's not who we're supposed to be. Good girls don't show anger. Good mm-hmm. girls don't, they don't get frustrated. They don't raise their voice. This is who you are if you do that. And so I think to really tap in and access that power is to use a couple different tools to really tune in emotionally and understand that you can experience those things. That's the part of being a human being. We gain access to breaking that conditioning when we start to recognize that no, the only way that I'm going to be fully tapped into who I am is if I allow myself to experience the entire expression of a human being, which are the uncomfortable emotions. They're not bad. Anger, disappointment, embarrassment, vulnerability, whatever it is, and the comfortable emotions, happiness, joy, peace, contentment. And so when you raise societies, especially girls, to avoid, to keep quiet, to be seen and not heard, and to not use their voice and express themselves, when they're feeling helpless, when they're feeling vulnerable, when they're feeling frustrated, when they're feeling sad, when they're feeling angry, 2020 is a perfect example. It creates such resistance, because when you're not supposed to be something and you're completely submerged within it, it feels incredibly drowning.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very powerful to recognize that, one, emotions are experienced in the body. They're not experienced in the mind. Mm-hmm. So it will present itself as a physical sensation. Two, emotions are, even the root word of emotion is energy in motion. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be transient. It's meant to be your navigation system. It's not meant to create your identity. It's meant to help support you and navigate you. Mm-hmm. And it's not fixed. It's transient. So you will move through the day, the week, your life, feeling different emotions and using it. If we use it as navigation, it's powerful. If we use it as trying to identify with this sort of twisted idea of who we are and quiet ourselves when we're feeling frustrated and only express joy and happiness, we have to fight with that resistance quietly forever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's powerful to know that it only lasts 90 seconds. The physical sensation of an emotion only lasts 90 seconds. And I think that Joan Rosenberg coined that confidence is a deep sense of knowing that you can handle the emotional outcome of whatever you pursue.
Mm-hmm. I always wondered why, if you look at the range of emotions, mm-hmm. right? Why some are perceived as positive and why some are perceived as negative, because aren't they all just emotions? Like, fear is an emotion, like joy or like excitement. You know, speaking of the anger piece, because I definitely connect with that it's okay for some people to express anger, and that's expected and, you know, often rewarded and tolerated. But women, angry, unhinged, like,
totally. You know, yeah.
Right. So it's very interesting to me, and how we are complicit in that, in the way in which we allow ourselves to experience, feel, express our own range of emotions, and then the story we tell ourselves about what we are experiencing, that it's good or bad, like stress, bad, burnout, bad, anger, depression, anxiety, bad, joy, good. And it just feels like we're always trying to push ourselves into this realm of positivity by ignoring or deprioritizing what actually is really going on for ourselves. And I know you've talked about this before, this toxic positivity, and I've always wanted to hear you describe that because I want to know more about that.
Yeah, it's really powerful. And I think like just as you expressed, like it's, we kind of become conditioned that there's emotions that are meant to be expressed in the male form. There's emotions that are meant to be expressed in the female form. And then there's emotions that you just keep quiet or you shove down, you just swallow. And toxic positivity is this idea that you're only supposed to feel a certain way. You're only supposed to feel happiness, joy, contentment, and everything. And that's meant to be felt. And everything else is meant to be fixed. So disappointment, embarrassment, helplessness, vulnerability, whatever it is meant to be fixed. And so if you are consistently feeling vulnerable, if you're consistently feeling frustrated or anxious, and you have the idea that it needs to be fixed, that is an ongoing battle, and that will burn you out, because emotions aren't designed to be fixed. They're designed to be felt. Mm-hmm. And once you allow yourself to feel the whole spectrum of emotions and to recognize that, wait a second, there's no good or bad emotions. It just is what it is. It's designed as navigation. And so there's generally 8 uncomfortable emotions that we tend to avoid. We tend to work around. Let's see if I can remember them, guys. sadness, anger, frustration, vulnerability, helplessness, embarrassment, disappointment, and shame. Those are the 8 emotions that we generally try to avoid, to fix, to work around, to swallow, to not experience, because it's uncomfortable, because it's painful. And so when we're consistently trying to avoid it, the irony is that when you try to avoid an emotion, it's not going anywhere. It's like holding on to it. It's like holding on to something that then by nature is transient, but you're keeping it there. And so toxic positivity is about recognizing that if you feel as though you're supposed to only present and look and speak and feel a certain way, then that narrative also implies that there's a way to not speak and look and present yourself. But that completely devoids the fact that you're human and you're allowed, and it's your right. And it's not only your right, it's your navigation to recognize that. Even the term stress and anxiety are incredibly vague. If you had a friend come to you and said, I'm really anxious, it's almost like you don't know what to say. Mm. If you had a friend come to you and say, I'm feeling vulnerable, it's specific. Mm-hmm. So the brain doesn't recognize stress and anxiety because it's so gray, it's so vast, that when you're telling yourself, I'm really anxious, I want you to actually say, you know what? Most of the time when I'm saying I'm feeling anxious, I'm actually just feeling vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And when you start to recognize that you're allowed to feel vulnerable and it's going to present itself in your body a certain way, and you can sit with it for a minute, you can use that information to then use that to identify it, but then use that information to take action, to express yourself, or to just process, to just sit with it. Because when you consistently lump it under these umbrella terms of I'm vulnerable, I'm anxious, I'm stressed, or I'm not supposed to be feeling this way, it creates such resistance that that's the hill that we're trying to climb. Mm-hmm. When realistically, we don't recognize that we have the power to change the entire hill, to change how we see it.
So if that is a common emotion that women are experiencing, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling worried, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling uncertain, I'm feeling, I think I said anxiety, whatever these are, the list that we just went through, that I should have written them down, but I didn't. I was like totally listening. What do we do with that then? So, you know, we acknowledge it, we're not feeling great.
Yeah.
Rather than burying it down and being like, ooh, this is bad, I don't want to feel this way because I've been conditioned to believe that this is not good.
Right.
What's the alternative then? So what do we do next?
So I would say, first of all, and I can almost, there's like a universal dropping of the shoulders when you say this, it's whatever you're feeling, if you're feeling burnt out, like telling yourself, like, I'm feeling burnt out, I'm feeling frustrated, I'm feeling angry, whatever it may be. And that's okay. It's okay. It's meant to be felt. So emotions are felt in the body, not in the mind. The way that we perpetuate emotions is that we feel it in the body. Let's say embarrassment, for instance, is like, we kind of have this universal sense of like flushing, right? Mm-hmm. We feel it in the body. We identify it as embarrassing. And then we create a story in our mind about what this means and what other people think. And that sort of, it's just sort of, our mind just goes away with us. When we identify that we are feeling a certain emotion, when we feel physical sensations and we're like, okay, what is this really? It's not stress. It's not anxiety. I'm not allowed to use those terms. What am I really feeling? And you sit with it and you take the power of the mind's focus and put it on the physical sensation. What it does is it prevents you from creating a story about it. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have the capacity to create a story about it, the emotion is allowed to move. And so you sit with it. It's like, I'm embarrassed. I'm feeling vulnerable. I'm feeling disappointed. And then it kind of moves within sort of 90 seconds. Even neuroscience has confirmed that biochemical reaction lasts about 90 seconds. And then with that more precise information, you can use it rather than saying I'm stressed. With stress has this sort of connotation. It's like, I'm like flailing. Mm. You use very specific pinpoint terminology to say, you know what? I'm angry. And when you know that you're angry and you're not sort of quote unquote stressed, you're angry. That's when you decide, okay, you know what? I'm going to take action with this information. I'm going to express myself. I need to voice it. Or I'm just going to sit with it. Like this is something that I'm just going to sit with and it's going to move. And that way, what happens is that you disengage the story from the emotion and the stress response responds to the story. Right. So you allow yourself to be. In 90 seconds, it's sort of like ride the wave. You allow yourself to be, you allow it to move, and then you decide what to do with your thoughts afterwards. You decide how to take action from it instead of perpetuating the narrative, which is usually a conditioned response when the last time you felt angry or frustrated or upset. It's a very conditioned narrative. And that way you gain a little space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So rather than being like, here it comes again. And oh, look, you know, this is just my pattern. This is what is always happening for me. Of course I'm feeling stressed. Of course I'm being angry. Life sucks and everything is horrible in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 100%. I'm allowed to feel angry.
This is okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's your navigation.
I'm going to try that with my daughter because she's, you know, experiencing obviously a full range of emotions at 10. And like last night she was really angry and she was you could see it. And as she was calming down, I was stroking her head and I'm like, it's okay for you to feel angry. Like, don't be upset at the fact that you're feeling angry. It's okay. It's an emotion. I love you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, I watch them spin.
Mm-hmm. They don't understand. Like
they don't know why it's happening.
Grown ass women don't, like, we don't have, let alone like a 10-year-old, right?
I know.
To be like, this is what I'm feeling. So it's very calming to label how you feel. Mm-hmm. Because if emotions are navigation and we don't identify them, it's kind of like, think of it like a radar. If you're not signaling if the radar is going to get louder and louder and louder, if you don't hear it. Mm-hmm. And it's like this idea of good or bad emotions. It's like saying like one certain sort of one, like West is better than East. It's mm-hmm. a navigation system and it's totally fine. It's, you're totally allowed. It's your right to feel how you feel. And it's meant to be information. It's meant to be usable information.
Yes. I think that's so empowering. And, you know, when I think just back to, you know, conditioning and, you know, how that's been handed down and even, you know, it still exists definitely. Like, mm-hmm. You go to school as a kid or you go to work and don't get angry, like mm-hmm. just be positive, right? You know, don't show any negative, quote unquote, negative emotions because that's not tolerated here and bad things will happen to you if you do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think as women, what we end up doing and what I see a lot of is just being silent with our emotions. Like, and you mentioned that too, like, you know, being alone and not really wanting to talk about it because how will I be perceived by other people if I actually start talking about what I am feeling? The lights went on for me and I probably should have already known this, but I heard it expressed this way. And I was like, this makes so much sense. You know, that we used to think that we were thinking beings you know, that sometimes expressed emotions. And I think that was my life experience. Like, I was always labeled by my family as being like too emotional. Don't be too emotional, like stiff upper lip, like British upbringing, keep it under wraps, right? And that prioritization over like rational and intellectual thought. And then I heard somebody say, we are actually emotional beings that sometimes think. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
We are.
And that takes a lot of the stress off of, like, when you recognize that, is that you're not meant to fix everything with your thoughts and your mind, because it is prejudice. Like, it is sort of skewed, our thoughts and our mind, that we're meant to be, we are designed to be feeling beings that think. And it's your purpose.
I already feel more relaxed having this conversation with you. It's such a great day now. Shoulders down.
And I know that we're running out of time, but I don't know. I have all the time in the world for you, but.
Yeah, I know, but I'm getting to that. I'm getting to the, like, so what's the next piece? And for women who are experiencing, you know, some stress or a lot, or are feeling burnout, are lacking, you know, the mojo that they want to have in their life, how can they connect with you? How can they find you? What does that look like?
Well, can I share one more thing first?
Yeah, of course. No, you can't.
Because I know that there's a lot of women. So I'm going to share two things. One, if you're feeling burnt out, my love, please do not, because oftentimes when we're feeling burnt out, we try and we get a little aimless with what we're doing. We're trying to do 100 things in a day, and we feel like we've completed half of three of them. And we're really, really tired. So one thing is that when we're feeling incredibly stressed, our blood sugar was off significantly. So if you can time it so that you're eating regularly high fat, high protein foods, your insulin, your blood sugar will take over what your stress hormone can't. So consistently nourishing yourself, because oftentimes when we feel burnt out, we're not even focused on eating. We're not even focused on kind of doing that. So consistently nourishing yourself. And it's also a physical act of self-love, which is, it speaks sort of this energetic volumes on a deeper level. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we don't transition through the day well. And so what I mean by that, and you alluded to this, I feel it. Women do carry a lot. There's a lot on our plate. We carry a lot. And so the morning, kind of feel tired waking up, come around, we're good in the morning. All of a sudden the afternoon hits, we're feeling like it's feeling less energy, more tired. And then we're sort of burning out at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. We transition throughout the day hundreds of times. And by transition, I mean like from getting out of bed to getting up, to getting your breakfast to sitting down, to jumping in the car to get something. And so recognize where there are bigger transitions in your day, where you drop the kids off, for instance, and then you come back to your home base, you go to work. The way that we are able to generate energy is to, when you are finished with one transition, let's just say, for example, like you just dropped your kids off and you're sitting in the car, close your eyes for 1 minute, take a couple deep breaths. Doesn't have to be super deep, but remember, prolong the exhale. And remind, like, just say, you can either think of like your whole body releasing and relaxing. Like, you can think of like certain parts of your body and working up, like your feet and your calves and your thighs and your belly and your shoulders and your head. But if that's too sort of tedious in the beginning, just tell yourself over and over while you're breathing, release, like just release. What it is, it's a mental cue that you take your focus from what you've just done and you don't have to focus on that anymore. And so you just tell your mind, just release. And then the next thing is you create an intention about how you're going to show up in the next environment. So it's, I'm releasing what I just went through and I'm going to go into work and I'm going to feel, I'm going to feel present. I'm going to feel alert. I'm going to feel great. Like you just said it. Like you reminded me of this. You're like, I'm going to have a great day now. Mm-hmm. It's an intention. And it's, your, how you speak, how your languages are commands to the brain. And so when you have the capacity to transition well throughout the day, what that does is that it breaks up that energy drain in the day and you get that sort of sense of release. And it's not just a psycho-emotional thing. It's actually like a biochemical thing. Like you're allowing your body to release the energy that it just exerted, and you're creating an intention about where you're going to focus your energy next. And that transition piece is huge for generating energy throughout the day and not feeling like you're wearing the weight of the entire day or the week or the year, let alone on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm. So good. Like, oh man. Because isn't it that just like the more common experience, which is like, and on to the next, and let's just keep piling it on, piling it on. And, you know, maybe at some point this week, I'll get a chance to breathe. Like, I think that that is the more common, unfortunate pattern that I definitely hear a lot of. It's like, you know, well, when I take vacation, then I will breathe. It's like, really? Yeah. You're going to wait 8 months before you actually allow yourself some space. So yeah. All about making choices that liberate us. And that is more within our power and control minute by minute than we I think give ourselves the opportunity to realize or fully experience. So you're such a gift, Mal. Thank you so much.
You're a gift.
I love this conversation. I needed this conversation for me. I think I need to talk to you every day. I'm going to listen to this again when I'm like, you know, yeah, definitely. Stress is real. And I think we need to talk. Mm. Anger is real. All these emotions are real. And I think that we need to have more open dialogue about this, because if we just live with it in silence and in shame, you know, we don't get to experience anything else.
Absolutely. And it wears us down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which is a choice. Mm. So how do we find you for those women who are listening and they're like, this Mal woman sounds amazing. I want to talk to her some more.
Oh gosh, of course. You can find me on Instagram, dr.mallory. Same for website, drmalloryryan, I think, .com. I don't know, I'm not there often. I got the emails.
You're not just Googling yourself every day.
Yeah, not necessarily Googling myself. So that's probably the easiest way. My email's through there. Love chatting, love connecting, love doing this stuff. I think this was sort of what I was meant to do. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I feel anyway. And I would love to connect. And we should do it again sometime.
Yeah, we should. We will. And to be continued, for sure. And talk to us in, you know, we've got a few minutes left. Talk to us about your community, the Female Collective, because I know that that's something that some women are probably curious about. And what is that? How do they engage with that?
Of course. So I created the Female Collective. It began, and it really is a passion project. So the only reason why I am so drawn and feel passionate about sort of the brain, the mind, the hormones, how our body responds, is because I've experienced it. I've experienced extreme anxiety. I've experienced eating disorders, depression. I had a very tumultuous teenage 20s years where it was incredibly difficult to maneuver through and to navigate through. And so when I started to gather more information and gain a little bit more awareness and understanding about how this operates, I remember the one thing that I felt more consistently than anything else was isolation. Like, nobody feels this way. It's me. Mm-hmm. And just as a human being, just how we're designed, we're not designed to be isolated. Sort of primally, the isolated member of the group is the one that has the least likely chance of survival. So I always felt sort of an incredible sense of shame and isolation. And so the Female Collective was born out of this idea of gathering women together and talking about these issues that they may not have talked about before, or talking about some of these strategies and techniques. I jump on once a week on Mondays at 10 a.m. It's one of my favorite times of the week. And we just chat. I chat about sex hormones and stress and tips and all these kind of cool things. And we have lots of interactions. And I ultimately created the resource that I wish I had 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's how that's born.
Love that.
Yeah.
We will definitely provide all the links to all of that. So to make it easy for anybody who wants to find you and who wants to have a conversation with you. If you like this conversation today, definitely I would highly recommend booking some time with Dr. Mal and sitting down and talking about what's going on for you. And having my own experience, she can set you up on a plan to feel better, which I believe is the whole point. So thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. You create such beautiful spaces for people.
Ah, lovely. Well, that's what I like to do. So it's great when I can have lovely conversations with people like you. So thanks so much, and go and enjoy the rest of your day. Have a wonderful
you
weekend.
Too.
Okay.
You too. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Hello again. This is Harriet Schumacher, and thank you for listening and tuning into The Leadership Show. I really hope that you enjoyed what we were discussing today. And if you did, if you liked what you heard and you want to continue to be a part of our community, here's a couple of ways that you can do that. First, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You want to make sure that you get our releases coming to you each week. And if you would love to give us a rating and give us some feedback about the show, of course, we would love to hear your thoughts. And on another note, if you want to be a part of our community, we have a private Facebook group for women in leadership. It is actually called the Women in Leadership Group. You can find us on Facebook. We have over 1,300 professional women who are inside that community who are having amazing conversations right now about what they care the most about. I go live inside that group every Tuesday to give you free training and free coaching. So we hope that you join. We'd love to see you over there. So thanks so much, everyone. Enjoy your day, and we look forward to hearing you and being with you again next week. Take care.